The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Yes, it is, and it's Friday, November 8th, 2019. This show, I suppose one might say, is dedicated to what I call the durables in life. There's the evanescent and fading and fast-moving and frenzy, and we're not doing that today. We're doing the big stuff, a lot of it culture, a lot of it life, a lot of it history, a lot of it the human condition. I heard Dennis Prager about a week or so ago. He's doing a show. I think it was in Philadelphia. I think it was in Pennsylvania. It could have been Florida. Not important. And he did a show with three recovering addicts. He said it was one of the best shows he ever did. I heard it, and I understand why he said that. He said there is more wisdom in rooms of recovery than almost any American college campus. We're heading into holiday season. What's Thanksgiving? About 3 weeks out, and then we have a quick ride to Christmas and Hanukkah and the New Year's. It's a particularly tough time for those who are either struggling with substance abuse, substance use, or in recovery. And I like to, every year, bring in the same guest to talk about how to get through it, get to it, and get through it. His name is Steve Moak, Jr. He is the CEO of True Mobile Health. Many of you hear about me talking about an organization I am delighted to affiliate with called Not My Kid. Steve Moak, Jr. is the kid, Not My Kid, is named after. Welcome back to the studio, Steve.
True story, and thank you for having me.
You bet. Why don't we start with your story, and we'll go from there. You want to do that?
I'm happy to share any type of background.
You get something out of it every year. So.
Well, I never set out to be the kid, if that makes any sense. And really, just to give you a little background as to where that came, I went to middle and high school here locally. I went to Cocopah Middle School, then on to Chaparral High School. I was very involved in student government, captain of sports teams and track and basketball, and very involved and well-liked. And during that time, what everybody else on the outside didn't really know is that I was developing a serious drug and alcohol habit that was really starting to grow rapidly, even in high school. And when I went away to college at the University of Colorado at Boulder, quickly escalated to the point of I was in a treatment center before I was even of legal age to be drinking. And I needed that. And it really took over my life and really changed the course of my life. And during that time, I got sober, I went to treatment, got involved in 12-step programming, and I was able to sit down with my parents and Dr. Mark Rohde, a psychologist here in town, and we had this idea about Not My Kid. And really, it was not my kid, meaning my kid was this, that, captain of this, involved in this, well-liked, teachers, students, friends, all of those types of things. But meanwhile, I had this growing thing inside of me that I really wasn't even fully aware of. And it was kind of the denial from the parent side that really launched Not My Kid. And that started with me going out to schools and PTAs and sharing my story when I was 20, 21 years old. And that was really the foundation for where Not My Kid got started. And now at the event that they had yesterday morning, they shared they've reached over 2 million lives, right, which to me is unbelievable.
Right. I like to say there's not a day in the school year we're not in at least one school in the state of Arizona, often more. Say a word or two, if you would like, about you. We did have this great breakfast yesterday. The author we had come speak at our annual fall breakfast was Alex Berenson, who wrote a book called Tell Your Children the Truth About Marijuana, Mental Illness, and Violence. Book was published earlier this year. He's a New York Times bestseller. What did you get from that breakfast?
Well, I thought he was almost as good as my mom and I, who were the keynotes last year.
Right.
No.
Close runner-up.
I thought that—
Your mom, by the way, is affectionately known here as the Kentucky woman.
So I've heard.
Okay.
First off, what an incredible turnout from just influencers across the state of Arizona, and I was so proud to be a part of that. It's from Governor Doug Ducey to county attorneys from across the state and representatives and senator. I mean, it was really impressive to see the folks that came together to really hear this message. And as someone who was personally addicted to marijuana And I can't emphasize enough, and I try and say that every time that you and I get together, because you 100% can be addicted to marijuana. And anyone else who tells you that is either in very strong denial or is just flat out lying. And one of the things I think I've shared with you before is then take it away from that person and see what happens. You're going to see irritability, mood swings. You're going to see an impact on the sleep, appetite. Tell me that those aren't the symptoms and signs of something that you are addicted to.
Steve, you know about substance abuse. You've lived it. You have dedicated your life to helping others stay out of it once they get recovery, as well as you and your mom and your dad and others through Not My Kid have done our best to work on the front end of it, which is prevention. So we kind of cover both sides of this thing. Steve, talk a little bit about what you heard from Alex. Maybe it was different, or you heard from the room that was different. He was focusing most of his talk yesterday about marijuana. It could apply maybe to other things as well, but did you hear anything particularly yesterday?
I loved how he talked about the facts of what we're seeing in Colorado and other places, and that especially he kept using the term population-wide, right? So he's kind of extrapolating what we're seeing in some of these instances and talking about what it could look like on a national level. And I think that really got my attention of, yes, we see it happening in these, but now extrapolate that out across the country, and we could have a serious impact that marijuana, cannabis, is having on our population. And that really made me think about it in a different way, I think.
Of course, not the only substance that we have problems with. Over 70,000 Americans a year die from substance abuse overdose. And that doesn't say anything about the tens of thousands, really hundreds of thousands more who suffer without dying through substance abuse. It can be legal products, including alcohol, right? The probably most abused substance happens to be a legal product. I don't want to ignore that part either. But for those who get recovery, this is a very hard time of year, isn't it? What do you recommend to people in early recovery, middle recovery, late recovery, long-term recovery, as they go into these challenging times? Why are they challenging? What do you recommend? And by the way, let me invite callers to join us as well if they have questions, suggestions, feedback. 602-508-0960. Talk about this time of year.
So it's interesting. I was actually listening to Dennis Prager on a fireside chat on the drive over here to see you this morning, and he was talking about hobbies, and that got me thinking, knowing what we were going to be discussing. I think hobbies or activities are really important. Anything that kind of prevents that isolation. What I really see people struggle with is when they start to get down and then they pull back, and now it's easy to find yourself curled up in a room with the doors closed and a bottle seems like the answer at that time. So the more that you can stay engaged, create that support network around you, don't be afraid to say something. If you're a loved one and you're seeing some of this behavior, I'd also say something. Right, I would reach out to that person. You don't know the depth that could be going to. And really, that one action of reaching out to somebody, letting them know that they're there, and not trying to solve all of their problems, that could be the difference in making somebody's holiday seasons or maybe just getting them through that night.
12-step programs are very valuable. They're not for everyone. I think that's a fair thing to say. You correct me on anything I say wrong.
No.
But they can be very valuable for those that get benefits from them. I've been to what are called open meetings, where you can,
sure,
a friend or loved one can bring someone to these meetings. And one of the things I have observed in them is there's a lot of great life learning in there. Obviously, there is. And it's probably the best hour you can spend without spending more than a buck, right? They ask maybe for a buck. That's all as a donation.
That's true.
Right. I don't know if the price has gone up, but that's my memory of it. And you don't even have to give that. But one of the interesting things I always ask people that are amenable to me asking is, how do you deal with what we all deal with? We all read, listen to, what's the word I want? Inspirational messages, stories, sermons even. And we go, yeah, that's how I want to live my life. You might walk out of a 12-step meeting feeling the exact same way after about an hour. And then someone cuts you off at the red light, or perhaps you're going into a holiday meal with a sibling that you've been at daggers drawn with for many, many months or years, perhaps. Things can change in an instant. And it's easy, right? It's easy to go back to an old habit.
One of the things that I found, I choose to use a 12-step approach as part of my recovery, and I was in a crappy mood the other day, pardon my language.
It's
but
okay. We can go up to crappy.
Okay, sorry.
But as Margaret Thatcher said, that far and no farther.
Okay, I apologize. But
I
was not feeling good, and I just drove myself over to a meeting, and instantly the benefit that I see is being able to sit down. And I started talking to another younger gentleman who'd been struggling and had about 2 weeks sober. And that changed my entire perspective. And it immediately snapped me back into focus as to this is what I need to be doing is helping others, right? And whether you choose to use a 12-step model for your means of helping others or just doing that in your day-to-day life, I think that's really the value that the programs like that can bring to me. And that was, again, it just always snaps me back into focus when I do that.
Nicely stated. I'm Seth Leaps, and he is Steve Moak Jr. He's the CEO of ChewMobileHealth.com. If you're early in recovery, mid in recovery, if you want help trying to find recovery, if you have questions about any of that or feedback, give us a call, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. I am Seth, delighted to have with us Steve Moak Jr. talking to us about substance abuse, prevention, recovery, how to help friends, how to help family members, maybe even how to help yourself a little bit, especially as we go into the holiday seasons. And you're welcome to give him a call if you'd like at 602-508-0960. Steve, what are signs family, friends, loved ones might look for? If they suspect, or if they don't suspect, my gosh, that someone in their life or someone close to them may be struggling with a problem. What do you tell people?
A great question. I mean, and what's interesting, I know in my case and in a lot of other folks, they already knew, right? Like you just kind of know when someone's behavior or drinking is maybe not quite the same as the others. Now, if all of a sudden there's a shift in a mood or behavior or they're isolating some more, or appetite, weight loss, weight gain, maybe work schedule. Work is one of these funny things because people kind of gauge it and if you get to work, but it's almost the very last thing to go. So if you start missing work and things, you've probably had a problem for some time.
That's
it's like the last thing that people kind of hold on to that I'm okay.
And in a way, it's something they might even publicly say. I'm fine.
Exactly.
Is there a phrase functioning? You know,
correct.
Functioning.
Correct.
You hear the phrase functioning alcoholic, but they say, no, my work isn't suffering.
We've
right?
seen that a lot with guys. Yeah. And it's like, hey, I'm still bringing home the bacon.
Right.
I'm still here. So if you keep checking those boxes, but if you start to cross that line, now you really maybe need to take a good hard look at that.
Then, two, there's that fine line of how to approach and what to do, and that's fraught with difficulty. And there's also the difficulties of knowing if someone has a problem or if they're just kind of in excess at a certain point, too. These are all very difficult lines to navigate, and probably you shouldn't do it alone.
No,
right?
This is tough stuff,
yeah.
Right? Substance use is just hard. We see so much that's tied from your family, right? I mean, there can be a genetic component that can be passed down. But I would reach out to others who have maybe been through this before. I mean, there is groups for the family members and loved ones of the person struggling with the substance use, whether that's Al-Anon and different things like that, that kind of talk about the codependency issues, what to do. There's an organization called PALS here in town, Parents of Addicted Loved Ones. That's a tremendous organization that is really helping educate parents on what to do when they have sons or daughters, because we get Mom and myself get so many phone calls of, hey, what do we do? We've thrown our hands up. We've spent money on treatment centers. My son or daughter just kind of keeps relapsing and keeps relapsing. What do we need to do? So, and it really isn't just about the individual. This is really a family issue and it needs to be addressed as such if you really want to make problem. Now, does that mean that detox and treatment or outpatient programs are the answer? It could be. It certainly could be. But there's a lot that, and by the way, this takes a long time.
Yeah.
So there is not a weekend quick fix, short type of
intervention. I want to talk about that with you, this long time. It's a lifelong time. Because a lot of the treatment centers, you have the standard notion of a month-long or a 28-day-long program. That's not going to do it.
No.
That's the start of doing it, no. If that's the start.
Well,
say something on that.
Well, I could say too much about that, quite frankly. And really, the 30 days was determined by insurance, not clinicians, not people getting better in lives. That's how long. And by the way, that's getting compressed substantially. We're seeing 2 weeks now is oftentimes what the insurance companies will reimburse for treatment. And that's if you have to fight to basically justify that you need to be in treatment. And this 30-day notion is really just the tip of the iceberg. And you know, you're going to spend a couple days in detox, kind of just coming out of the fog. That first week or two in treatment, you're still coming out of that fog. The minimum suggestion, I believe, would be a 90-day type of program. And that's a three-month commitment to really trying to make a significant change in your life. But if that's what it takes, then I think that that's really the appropriate step. This 30-day idea is just an idea driven by others. I don't buy it.
Now, people will say, I can't contemplate being sober for 30 days. I can't contemplate being sober for 90 days. This is where you get the notion of one day at a time. Your mom has a wonderful construction for parents when it comes to the beginning of a school year. I really like what she tells them because parents are worried about their children too and what are they going to do this year and next year. And your mom's view is kind of a version of a one day at a time thought. She says, well, let's just win this year, you know, because if you have a young one, you want to the secret – I've learned this from not my kid and your mom. Delay. Say something about that to parents.
Well, Alex said it yesterday at the conference as well. It's not that marijuana use is ever okay, but the longer that you can potentially push that out, the less damaging potential impact than it can have on your life. So
you've got a 12-year-old. Get the 12-year-old their 12th year without using anything. That's all you have to worry about. That's the thought.
If you can, to push that out as far as possible. And Not My Kid has done a great job on the prevention front and by offering the drug and alcohol testing that they can set that test on that kitchen counter. So if their son or daughter is going out and maybe know that they have to get tested randomly when they come home, it's amazing how many times I go out to lunch or dinner with my parents and a server, another table will come over and say, hey, thank you so much for what you've done with Not My Kid. We still have that test sitting on our counter right now. It made the difference, and we've talked to our son and daughter about how they did not use because they knew that test was waiting for them when they came home.
I'll give out the website for parents that want to check it out or anyone that wants to, notmykid.org. That is one of many things we do, but we do give out these drug test kits for home family use. We were at the – it's kind of funny. We were at our event yesterday, and someone came up to the table where we had a display of giveaway drug tests. Kids. And I offered it to the guy. He said, I don't need it. My son hasn't seen a toilet in 3 years. he's testing him all the time. But it works. It works. That's the point. And his son never knows when he's going to get tested, which isn't about the son as much as it is about the son being able to tell his friends.
Right. Gives them an out.
I can't do this because at home my dad might test me or my mom might test me.
And I think some of the converse may be true there as well, meaning if they use in spite of knowing that there's a potential consequence,
good point.
That could be someone who's now maybe at risk for more serious addiction.
Because that's a sign of a problem of abuse, isn't it?
In the face of consequences.
In the face of consequences.
Correct.
Right. That's
correct.
Another warning sign. That's an interesting point. Go ahead.
No, I think that that's also one of those warning signs of when things continue to go wrong and you know that life is not going exactly how you planned and choose to continue to pick up and engage in the behavior that's really causing a lot of destruction in your life. Obviously, there's something going on that needs to be addressed. So that could just be one of those early warning signs where we may be able to intervene. Earlier the intervention, you could be saving lives. I mean, I always share in my story, I only had one relapse. It lasted 12 years. Yep. If I could have really cutting that shorter, I could have gotten marriages and jobs and you know nice things back that I lost through the use of my addiction.
But we love you where you are now.
Thank you.
Great job, Steve Moak. You really are. And I thank you for everything you do in this community. I thank you for everything your family does for this community. And I thank you for spending part of your afternoon with us today.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you, Steve. I'm Seth Leibson, 602-508-0960. As we head into the last three segments of our show, our anti-penultimate, our penultimate, and our ultimate segments, it's Open Lines Friday. Whatever you want, whatever's on your mind, politics, culture, music advice, as long as it's not legal or medical or economic. I think I'm open to it. Give us a call. We'll be right back.